When a Jew anywhere is threatened or under attack, do all in your power to come to his aid. Never pause to wonder what the world will think or say. The world will never pity slaughtered Jews. The world may not necessarily like the fighting Jew, but the world will have to take account of him. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 182, A Future President and a Future Senator, Witness Evil. I'm Mayor Soloveitchik. Upon entering the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., one of the first pictures one encounters is that of the American arrival in Ohrsdruf, a labor camp that was an extension of Buchenwald. The GIs stare in abject horror at the ashes of a makeshift crematorium on which the charred remains of bodies can still be seen. And as I have discussed in commentary, one member of the American Armed Forces who witnessed this horrific sight sought to ensure that other American soldiers and politicians experienced it as well. And this, in the end, would have an impact on the future of the Jewish state, the Jewish people, and therefore of Jerusalem. We remember this today on Yom HaShoah as we ponder what it means to remember, to learn the lessons of history, before we continue in our story, that is the tale of the city of Jerusalem. Eisenhower entered Ohrsdruf with General Patton and General Omar Bradley. While Patton grew queasy and refused to go to certain parts of the camp, Eisenhower insisted on examining every inch. He then insisted that all Germans in the area be brought to look upon what their people had brought about. But it was not only Nazis, not only Germans, that Eisenhower wanted to see Ohrsdruf and Buchenwald, but also American forces, so that, as he famously commented, the GIs would see what they are fighting against. In an amazing letter to General Marshall back in Washington, Eisenhower presciently predicted that bearing witness would, in this case, prove even more important because there would be those that would seek to deny that the horror that was the Holocaust occurred. Eisenhower wrote to Marshall, quote, "The visual evidence and the verbal testimony of starvation, cruelty, and bestiality were so overpowering as to leave me a bit sick. In one room where they were piled up 20 or 30 naked men killed by starvation, George Patton would not even enter. He said he would get sick if he did so. I made the visit deliberately in order to be in position to give firsthand evidence of these things if ever in the future there develops a tendency to charge these allegations to quote-unquote propaganda," end quote. Thus did Eisenhower presciently predict the phenomenon of Holocaust denial. Eisenhower then added in a cable to Marshall that it was not only American soldiers that needed to bear witness to Nazi evil, but also the political leaders of the United States. The full text of this cable can be seen in the original today, and we have sent a link of the image of the cable to you. Here are some of Eisenhower's words. Quote, "We continue to discover German concentration camps for political prisoners in which conditions of indescribable horror prevail. From Eisenhower to General Marshall, for eyes only, I have visited one of these myself, and I assure you that whatever has been printed on them to date has been understatement. If you would see any advantage in asking about a dozen leaders of Congress and a dozen prominent editors to take a short visit to this theater in a couple of C-54s, I will arrange to have them conducted to one of these places where the evidence of bestiality and cruelty is so overpowering as to leave no doubt in their minds about the normal practices of the Germans in these camps. I am hopeful that some British individuals in similar categories will visit the northern area to witness similar evidence of atrocity," end quote. Thus did Eisenhower strongly suggest that members of Congress come to see the camps, and this suggestion refracts through Jewish history because, as I've described in commentary, and I'm expanding on this here, one such member of the House of Representatives who came to Buchenwald was a young congressman by the name of Henry Scoop Jackson. And he ultimately, decades later, in the Senate, worked to protect Israel, and he introduced the Jackson-Vanik Amendment, which did so much for Soviet Jewry. When Senator Jackson was posthumously awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom by Ronald Reagan, the president explained how memory drove the senator. Here are President Reagan's words speaking of Scoop Jackson, quote, "His support for Israel grew out of his knowledge that political decisions must spring from moral convictions. It wasn't some grand geopolitical abstraction that made him back the creation of Israel. It was seeing the concentration camps firsthand at the end of the war. At Buchenwald, he saw the evil, as he said, written on the sky, and he never forgot. He said the Jews of Europe must have a homeland. He did everything he could to strengthen the alliance between the United States and Israel, recognizing that we are two great democracies, two great cultures standing together. Today, both nations are safer because of his efforts. He never stopped speaking out against anti-Semitism in the Soviet Union, and he was never afraid to speak out against anti-Semitism at home. And Scoop Jackson would not be bullied. He conceived and fought for the Jackson Amendment to the Trade Act of 1974. There's hardly a soul among the hundreds of thousands of Soviet Jews who later found freedom in the West who was not sustained in the struggle to emigrate by the certain knowledge that Scoop was at his side. End quote. So President Reagan said, and then in accepting the medal, Scoop Jackson's widow said as follows, quote, Mr. President, I'm proud to accept this great honor the nation has bestowed on my husband. I accept this award not only on behalf of Anna Marie, Peter, and myself, but also on behalf of all those who worked with Scoop and shared his causes and convictions over the years. As Scoop used to say, if you believe in the cause of freedom, then proclaim it, live it, and protect it, for humanity's future depends upon it. Mr. President, we thank you today from the bottom of our hearts. End quote. So Mrs. Jackson said. As for Eisenhower, the memory of that moment remained as well, and it had repercussions in ways that are often not fully appreciated. In 1965, the philanthropist and Jewish activist Max Fischer visited former President Eisenhower at his farm in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Many Jews were upset at the time with Eisenhower's administration for abandoning Israel during the 1956 Sinai War, an episode that we will later discuss in our series. Max Fischer was not there to discuss that matter with former President Eisenhower. He had come on behalf of the UJA, which wished to honor Eisenhower on the 20th anniversary of the liberation of the camps. This recollection seemed to have an effect on the former president because Fischer's biographer Peter Golden reports that as the discussion drew to a close, Eisenhower said, quote, you know, Max, looking back at Suez, I regret what I did. I never should have pressured Israel to evacuate the Sinai, end quote. Golden further tells us that Eisenhower also reflected that if, quote unquote, I'd had a Jewish advisor, then Eisenhower reflected, quote, I doubt I would have handled the situation the same way, end quote. Golden writes that Fischer never forgot that moment and resolved never to take for granted what one person's work on behalf of the Jewish people could accomplish. It's now understood, as obituaries written in honor of Fischer describe, that in 1973 it was Fischer whose activism helped impact the sending of arms by the Nixon administration to Israel during the Yom Kippur War. This means that it is not too much to say that a line can be drawn between Eisenhower's memories and Fischer's own work some three decades after the Holocaust. Meanwhile, in 1982, an individual in Israel whose parents had been murdered by the Nazis had the Holocaust very much on his mind. In the months before Menachem Begin ordered a strike on the Iraqi nuclear reactor in Osirak, it was clearly the fate of his family that was in his thoughts. As Avi Shilon notes in his biography of Begin, the prime minister told his cabinet during an Osirak planning meeting that, quote, this morning when I saw Jewish children playing outside, I decided, no, never again, end quote. And in a meeting with American Jews in May 1981, as he was pondering the Osirak situation, Begin was asked by the visiting American Jews what lessons should be drawn from the Holocaust. Begin replied, quote, first, if an enemy of our people says he seeks to destroy us, believe him. Don't doubt him for a moment. Don't make light of it. Do all in your power to deny him the means of carrying out his satanic intent. Second, when a Jew anywhere is threatened or under attack, do all in your power to come to his aid. Never pause to wonder what the world will think or say. The world will never pity slaughtered Jews. The world may not necessarily like the fighting Jew, but the world will have to take account of him. End quote. We remember all these connections between memory and leadership as we mark Yom HaShoah before we continue tomorrow, Jerusalem Story, reminding ourselves today to remember and to allow our memory to impact us. May today's marking of Yom HaShoah be one of mourning, memory, and meaning. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.